Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander viewers are warned that the following program contains voices of deceased persons. Hello, you're listening to Earth Matters, earthmatters.org.au on the Community Radio Network, bringing you environmental and social justice stories. I'm Nikki Stott.
Hey, look, I think the community is quite stronger from this ongoing sort of a dispute with FMG. If anything, it ignited the flame in a sleepy community that was felt that they had no power whatsoever. I mean, knowledge is everything in this game. It's about providing your people with the information that they can properly inform themselves and inform other members of the community as well, then to understand what this process is all about. Now we see it with both eyes, and it's clear to us that the Native Title Act is really just a it's just a shamble in terms of a process to legitimize the taking of our lands again. We didn't plan for this to happen. All we said to FMG at that time is that, you know, their remarks was to us is that if it's not going to accept the deal, then we're going to be taking the land from you anyway. So we said, well, look, we're going to stand up and protect our rights on this. We don't know how we're going to do it yet, but we're going to sure try.
That was Indobondi Aboriginal Corporation CEO Michael Woodley in November last year on the campaign to protect his people's sacred land and sovereign rights from iron ore giant Fortescue Metals Group. The Indobondi Nation in the mid-northern Pilbara region of Western Australia travels south and inland from the coastal port of Dampier and encompasses vast, beautiful and protected wilderness areas of mountains, rivers, waterfalls and hidden sacred caves. 2 weeks ago, the Indobondi suffered a great loss when their beloved elder, Ned Cheedy, passed away. He was 105 years old. And this week I caught up with Michael Woodley to reflect on where the campaign is at now.
The land where FNG are mining, the Solomon Hub, how do you pronounce the real name?
It's called Ganjingaremuna. And it's give you a bit of a geographical sort of a idea in terms of where the Yibani country, you know, starts and finish and the amount of, you know, or the size of the area. That is our traditional homelands. So it's kind of from the Harding Dam right up, you know, past Military National Park, up right up to the Hamersley Ranges, and kind of sits on the border of the Karajini National Park.
And the Fortescue Metal Solomon Hub sort of right in the middle of that, just...
Well, the hub is situated in the middle of the Hamersley Ranges.
Yeah.
Of our country.
This issue with the Solomon Mine Hub started back in 2008 when Fortescue Metal Group made you a land offer requiring you to sell the... Sort of a demand, really, isn't it, to sell you the native title rights for what was an outrageously small amount of compensation?
Well, more of an ultimatum, basically, you know, in terms of, you know, you don't give us your native title rights and interests, we're going to take your land. But the compensation offer that we're giving you is one that we regard as being fair, and one that we regard as being, you know, basically all that you are worth.
And it was 4.5 million or something, contrasting with like their total profits are estimated to be like 280 billion or something.
There was a Four Corners show on this particular issue, and they'd done some figures themselves into probably give a broader scope in terms of what this project's value is. And it's valued to be somewhere around, you know, $280 billion worth of iron ore. And what FMG want to offer the Yibani Nation is only $4 million capped at today's price, forever and a day.
I wouldn't have thought that anyone could make Rio Tinto look good, but they certainly did that, didn't they?
Oh, look, I mean, these guys make all, you know, mining companies look good. You know, I've also heard other feedbacks that, you know, in terms of workshops, people using this particular case of what not to do in terms of dealing with, you know, dealing with traditional custodians.
It's like worst practice.
Well, exactly. Yeah. You know, exactly. And their slogan is that wanting to be the lowest cost provider. So, I mean, you know, even with that slogan, it gives no one any hope in terms, no traditional groups any hope in terms of, you know, getting a fair compensation out of your country, where these companies want, you know, want to mine.
Yeah. So understandably, you just rejected it and ended the negotiations in 2009. And then there was the problem of the community being divided. That, you know, it's documented that FMG used their money and employed staff and lawyers to create this, the splinter group situation, and divide the community and cause problems for the community. And then last year you appealed to the federal court, but the appeal was not successful. Is that right?
Well, we appealed to the federal court from the beginning, but that obviously wasn't successful, because at the end of the day, we're dealing with a stacked deck in terms of, you know, a legislation which is designed to be for Indigenous Australia, which is a Native Title Act. But it operates in favour of mining companies and the state governments. Every twist and turn in terms of how they grant approvals for mining companies to explore the mine on our country and to avoid native title, you know, proper native title process, and making sure that the declarations on the rights of Indigenous peoples that was endorsed by this, you know, by our government as well, are in line with, you know, wanting to do the right thing in terms of self-determination for Indigenous groups. The Act basically have no reflections in protecting the Indigenous peoples, you know, rights on this country. So it's merely a process where industry enters into, it forces us to enter into this process, and then at the end of the day it screws us, basically.
For those who don't realise the significance of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, this was adopted on the 30th of September 2007. It was a declaration that should have been adopted 50 or 60 years ago when the United Nations was formed.
Gubbi Gubbi Butchala Man Les Melitzer was the chair of the Global Indigenous Caucus and advocated on behalf of Indigenous peoples worldwide at the UN Nations when the Universal Declaration of Indigenous Rights was adopted in 2007.
When they formed the United Nations after the devastation of World War II, it was the principle that the territories that had been colonised by the powers of Europe would be given back to the peoples under the people's control. And territories all around the world, particularly in Pacific and Asia and Africa and in Latin America, were identified to be given back to control of the peoples under the self-determination. 37 new countries were created during that decolonisation process. But in Australia, like some other countries, no decolonisation has occurred. The conquest of this colony, the denial of the Aboriginal peoples, the original peoples, of our rights to our land, to our natural resources and our minerals, still is denied. We can't exercise those rights today. We couldn't exercise those rights 200 years ago when Philip landed in the first fleet. The Aboriginal people own the land. We own the land before colonisation and we own the land since colonisation. But nothing is being done to fix that problem up. And it's not only the land, but it's the resources. It's what it's underneath the land and it's what it's above the land. This is all part of our rights. The rights, the Declaration says, the rights to our lands, territories and resources. And it says we have the right to development. We have the right to economic, social and cultural development in accordance with our rights as peoples, in accordance with self-determination. Not to be told, go to school, learn English, do your maths and go get a white job. That is not our right to economic development. Our right to economic development is every time minerals are pulled out of this land, every time they make a $50 billion deal with China, a share of those resources goes back to the Aboriginal people. And that share is to be negotiated. But there's not whimper of a negotiation going on.
Would you be able to talk about some of the sites that you're unable to access now that you're really concerned or at risk, some of the Injibundi sites near the Solomon Mine?
The main site that runs through the Solomon Mine is a river, is a causeway, and it's called Ganjing Arimuna. And this is the causeway that, you know, Injibundi people travelled up and down, you know, back in the early days, moving from one end of the country to the other. We had law ceremonies at the top of this river as well, called Woolloomara, which where this breakaway group has stole their name from to give themselves this name to make them a part of the country, which they don't have any connection to the country at all. And so Ganjangarimono that runs through the main, which is the main river that runs through this Solomon Hub project. And in this river, we back in the early days, everyone used to collect ochres, sacred stones for initiations with boys going through what we call Bertara law. And back in 2009, 2010, there were surveys conducted in the area, and they found wall niches with skeleton remains still inside the caves. So it's got significant places like water holes and springs and stuff like that, which is a very important place to us. And this is a site now that we've been locked out of by FMG, and the Department of Indigenous Affairs here in Western Australia, not supporting the prescribed body corporate and making sure that the voice of the people represented by this legitimate organisation have access to our site so we can properly document it, record it, and then so we can then properly register it as sites. But FMG are refusing us access, and the Department of Indigenous Affairs are sitting on their hands. In the past 3 or 4 years, in the history of archaeological surveys and ethnographic surveys being conducted of this area, both of these, professionals and consultants who occupy these, these positions, have, most of them have pulled the pin and vowed that they won't work for FMG, again doing heritage surveys. One of the archaeologists came out and wrote a letter to the Department of Indigenous Affairs and saying that, FMG has altered my report. They've also threatened me and bullied me in terms of, not recording and registering, 215 sites that she found on the country. And told if you were to do this, then they would be withholding her invoice and won't be paying her.
She wanted to remain anonymous too, didn't she?
She wanted to remain anonymous, yes.
But you had got the email and so...
Yep.
Yep, you had proof of it.
Many other consultants, archaeologists and anthropologists, who I won't name, of course they want to remain anonymous as well, because they're also a bit scared in terms of what this company would do, but also said that, they found it hard working for this company because they were doing a lot of bad stuff.
They actually said that to you and other people at the at the Idjibundi Aboriginal Corporation, yeah. And so, getting back to the site of the mine and the sacred site, so and you're saying that it follows the river. Is that, would you say that's part of like your song line?
Yes,
yeah.
I mean the whole area is sacred to us. I mean the whole area is that something that we sing every year when we put young boys through initiations. The whole country is sacred to us because it's all connected, to one story, to one song that relates back to a bigger meaning and a complete picture of, us being Ijibundi, our religious, beliefs on country, our language, our culture, our songs, our stories. So every bit of country on area on our country holds a very significant, meaning to us. And this place, where FMG are wanting to develop their project, it's a very sacred place to us. Again, we're not being treated with the respect of the traditional custodians of this area who carry the songs and the stories. And we want to make sure that our history is here long after we're gone, so we can be able to preserve it and then pass it on to the next generation. But if we've been refused access while the bulldozers and the explosives are continuing, then it wipes our history from the face of this earth without giving us the opportunity to go and document and record for the next generation.
You're listening to Earth Matters, earthmatters.org.au on the Community Radio Network, bringing you environmental and social justice stories with Nikki Stott. If you've just tuned in, we're speaking with Indjibundi Aboriginal Corporation CEO Michael Woodley on the campaign to protect the Indjibundi people's sacred land and sovereign rights from iron ore giant Fortescue Metals Group.
I keep seeing FMG and Andrew Forrest will put out a lot of propaganda as well, you know, like he'll say, oh, well, you know, it's to create jobs or...
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, the thing that we may try and make clear to FMG and to any other companies who are listening as well and wanting to, you know, operate in any other country is that the fact that if you're offering jobs, you know, if you're offering training jobs and, you know, business opportunities, then that is part and parcel of your, you know, social license to operate. The government gives these mining companies a mining license. Now, some of the terms and conditions in that mining license is to make sure that they are providing indigenous people of that area with the opportunity of training, employment, and business opportunities. It's what is called the social license to operate. So what they're doing is taking that free kick from the government and then trading it off for a native title agreement.
Yeah.
So what they're basically saying is that, look, we got these terms and conditions that we have to do. Then they trade it off by saying, well, okay, well, if you give us your native title over this area of country, then we'll provide you with training, jobs, and employment. Very smart.
And they're not even jobs that you prefer to do. You've got your own self-determined businesses set up and jobs being created by them. That's kind of where you'd prefer to go anyway. Exactly.
This is what I always, you know, refer back to, the, you know, the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. It's about continuing to develop and improve our own economy. If it's to maintain, you know, our culture and language and looking after our country, if it's to provide, you know, the next generation with information about their heritage and culture and so on and so forth, then that's what we want to do. Right? And that's what the Declaration speaks of. It's a reflection of who we are as a society. That our purpose on this country, on this earth, is to continue to look after our country and our culture. Now, that's no matter what, it's what we're going to continue doing. So, if industry people want to do the right thing with traditional, you know, custodian groups like Ijebani and others, then they must first and foremost incorporate the declarations of the rights of indigenous people into the discussions that we have when reaching indigenous land use agreements. Then they can fully understand, first and foremost, who we are and what are our main priorities in developing our own communities.
Getting back to the actual mining site and the impacts, like that we've talked about the cultural impacts a bit, do you know if there's been a full independent study done on what the environmental impacts of the Solomon Hub will be?
There's never been an independent assessment on the environment of these operations ever, I believe. It's all done by the companies. And the government should be demanding in a project like this to be getting independent advice for all stakeholders.
You would think that would be essential, that although it's so common across the country with mining. This lack of
independent studies. I mean, look, the mining companies actually pull the strings in terms of, you know, how this country is run and is managed. I mean, it's a joke.
Yeah, and so with that area in the Hamersley Ranges or Kurrajini National Park, we've got like gorges coming out of there. I guess underground aquifers in that area as well, or is that more further north?
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, look, the gorges and the rivers that run from the Hamersley Ranges into what we call the main river. The Fortescue River, and in the Ijebani language, that river is called Yandanyarama. And the Fortescue River actually runs off to Millstream, and Millstream is where the main water pumps are that feeds the Pilbara with water from the Millstream River and the Millstream Aquifer. So that continued to be filled by the rivers coming from the Hamersley Ranges, you know, flowing down into the Fortescue River. So once they start mining in these areas, and they start cutting off the veins that are coming through and feeding the Fortescue, once the 40 is not getting its fair share of water, then it impacts down the bottom to Millstream, which is a sacred site for Ijebani people as well. And it has major impacts on the town surfaces, towns like Krata, Roban, Dampier, Wickham, which is where these big mining companies operate from anyways. So it's a very alarming operation overall. and it's not going to stop anytime soon. And we are afraid, being traditional custodians of this area, we are very afraid that at the end of the day, our country is going to be, you know, killed forever. We're not going to have any more animals in the country. We're not going to have, you know, the rejuvenation of growth with medicine and wild fruit and so on and so forth. And just ignoring, you know, the country that makes us who we are at the end of the day when we're looking to find some, you know, spiritual guidance and rehabilitation, then it won't be there anymore.
Yeah, I remember reading that there's concerns about the spirits in the area that if you're unable to go to them, as now you're not, and sing to them and make sure everything's right, then there's fears that you'll get sick or something bad will happen.
Well, no, exactly. I mean, look, our old people always believe that, you know, the country and the people of the country were one body. You know, it was a relationship that couldn't be broken. It's a reciprocal thing. You know what I mean? Where the country provided for the people and the people provided for the country. And having one without the other, then, you know, slowly but surely, you know, things will die. So most of my old people, you know, have kind of faded away because, you know, it's about, you know, their spirits dying, you know, with the country. It's kind of hard, you know, in this modern time. We, the new generation, I think, you know, brought up on the modern technology, you know, things like television and radio and CDs and so on and so forth. The old people who were born in the 1920s, 1930s, you know, born on country, lived most of their life on country and had that connection to country with the old people. And they don't know anything else but that. It's been really tough for them, that the decision-making and the power that they were given by the old people to make sure the country's been cared for, it's then been taken away by them by, you know, some government department based in Perth, by a government official who had never even been to this, you know, into the area before. So, it's very disrespectful. It goes against everything that the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous people, you know, speaks about. And we don't have any protection. The government doesn't protect us.
Yes, it's a shame. Shame on the state government and on the federal government too, because you've been calling on the environment minister, the federal environment minister, Burke, for a while to take action under the emergency powers of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Heritage Protection Act to stop the destruction and to let you have access to your sacred sites. Is that right?
You know, well, exactly. I mean, the whole idea of applying for this emergency declaration is for the government to make a emergency decision to either grant it or not grant it. But it's taking us on a merry dance where this process now is being drawn out because they want to look at all the options and review all the options and make sure that no one is being, you know, treated unfairly and so on and so forth. I mean, it defeats the purpose of applying for emergency declaration, for the government to make an emergency decision to assist us in making sure that our heritage is not wiped away. But like I said, it's been, you know, something like 5 months, I think, since we made the application and saw the minister, and still we're waiting.
Yeah, that sounds like the government to me.
Oh, it's a joke.
Yeah. And so you're asking people to email Tony Burke, of course, tony.burke.mp@environment.gov.au, or phone him at Parliament House even. I think his office phone number is 0262 77 7640 for people to hear that. And so what else is happening with the campaign now? Like,
well, what's happening with the campaign is that we've kind of, you know, taking a step back and reviewing, you know, what do we do in 2012 and how do we continue with our campaign. I think we went, you know, full throttle in 2011, and we just put out everything and anything that we can to bring out the issues for wider Australia to be a part of, and that kind of helped as well because it kind of showed that the Yibunni people weren't sitting down on their hands and letting this thing, you know, this unstoppable force right over our community and our country, and then basically start dictating in terms of what they want to do. So I think it was, you know, good for us to step up to the challenge and make sure that our voice is being heard. So this year we kind of taken a step back reviewing it, and our main focus is to try and, you know, reach out to the breakaway group of Yibunni people who are siding with FMG, in terms of, you know, giving them all the approvals of, you know, destroying sites, going ahead with their projects, granting other licenses to do other things on our country without the proper, you know, the proper protocols. So we're trying to reach out to the people and say, look, you know, you need to stop what you're doing, and you need to think about what you're doing. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think we need to try and mediate in terms of our differences on why we've come this far. Because the majority of the Yemeni people in our community now supports the YAC and in terms of how we would like to conduct the business moving forward. So that's our aim for 2012.
Fortescue Metals are the fourth largest iron ore producer in the world. The company has holdings of more than 87,000 square kilometres in Western Australia, making it larger than both BHP Billiton and Rio Tinto. Mining magnate Andrew Twiggy Forrest, the current non-executive chairman of Fortescue Metals Group, owns more than 30% through his investment vehicle, the Metal Group. In 2010, Twiggy surpassed James Packer as the richest man in Australia. The Chinese steelmaker Hunan Valen Iron and Steel Group, one of Fortescue Metals' biggest customers, are also one of its biggest shareholders at 17.5%. In 2009, Chinese steelmaker Hunan Valen Iron and Steel Group made an application for a $636 million stake in Fortescue Metals. The application was approved by Australian Treasurer Wayne Swan that same year. Under the agreement, Fortescue issued shares to Hunan Valen to fund the expansion of its iron ore mining operations in the Pilbara. Hunan Valen's chairman Li Chao-wei is also a non-executive director of Fortescue Metal Group. Other major FMG shareholders include HSBC Custody Nominees Australia Limited, who are also the number one shareholder for all of the big four banks in Australia, owning around 17% of the big four banks. JP Morgan Nominees Australia Limited, who are also the number two shareholder of the big four banks in Australia, owning around 14% of the big four banks. National Nominees Limited, a wholly owned subsidiary of National Australia Bank Limited, who are the number three shareholder, and Citicorp, the number four shareholder of the big four banks also. So basically most of the shares in Fortescue Metal Group are owned by Twiggy, Foreign Investment and the big banks. You've been listening to Earth Matters on the Community Radio Network around Australia with Nikki Stott. Today on the show, we spoke with Indjibondi Aboriginal Corporation CEO Michael Woodley on the campaign to protect his people's sacred land and sovereign rights from iron ore giant Fortescue Metals Group. For more information, go to indjibondi.org.au. That's spelt Y-I-N-D-J-I-B-A-R-N-D-I. Or call them on 08-9182-1141. Today's podcast and others like it can be downloaded at earthmatters.org.au. Earth Matters would like to thank the good folk at the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their generous financial support, and the dedicated peeps at the Community Radio Network for all their hard work in getting this program out to you, our listeners. Earth Matters was produced in the studios at 3CR Radio in Fitzroy, Victoria. Our contact phone is 0394198377 and our email is earthmatters3cr@gmail.com. That's all for today, but next week we continue to bring you the cutting edge of edges on the kind of environmental and social justice news that you won't find anywhere else, no matter how hard you look. Until then, see you later. Thank you.
Thank you.